Hello, my name is Maurice Washington. I want to welcome everybody to another episode of Executive Talk. Those who are watching live, those are that will watch later on our Roku station, or those that are listening on our podcast, thank you guys for joining us. In today's show, we're going to discuss what is a 1031 exchange. Now, there's a couple of different people that are watching this program today. There's one person who knows about the 1031 exchange and has been around it for quite some time. There's also some that have never heard of a 1031 exchange, and their first introduction to it is today. Either way, two things that I need to come out of this is that, number one, we need to know what a 1031 exchange is, and secondly, we need to know who to go to when we need to take advantage of these opportunities that are out here in the marketplace. So with me today, I have Trent Hendry, owner of Freedom 1031. So without further ado, let me go ahead and bring Trent to the stage. How you doing, Trent?
I'm great. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Doing well. Another wonderful day. You know how it is.
Yes, sir.
All right. So let's go ahead and jump into this. Before we talk about what a 1031 exchange is and all the glamorous things about it, tell us who you are, your background. How'd you get into owning this type of business?
So I've been involved in the closing industry for real estate for 23 years. Most of that work is working with a title and escrow company, which I still do. And then as part of doing closings for real estate, my dad owned his own exchange company, and I started working with him many moons ago. So probably about 15 years ago, started working with him on doing 1031 exchanges. That's how I got into the business. And then eventually I opened up my own exchange company.
Awesome. All right. All right. So let's just jump right into it and let's bring everybody home with what is a 1031 exchange? Why is this so important?
Yeah. So a 1031 exchange is a strategy that you use when you are selling a real estate investment property and looking to purchase a different real estate investment property. So this is what you would do with the 1031 exchange. The whole point is to defer your capital gains tax that you would regularly incur when you sell that real estate investment property. And this will allow you to keep all of the proceeds from that sale and reinvest them into the purchase of the new investment property. So it's known as a 1031 like kind exchange, exchanging one real estate investment property for another.
Okay, so that's fair. So when we talk about this, it sounds like this has some association with your taxes, right? Is this yes. Something within the IRS code that makes this available for everyone to do?
Yeah, so it's actually, when we're referring to a 1031 exchange, it's coming from section 1031 of the IRS code. So that's okay. That's the actual section where it explains the what an exchange is in like kind. And in this case, we're talking about real estate.
Okay. All right. How long has this code been around? And what do you think about the future of this code? Because I'm assuming, just like, and this is not for everybody to go political on me, so stay neutral.
Sure. Yeah.
But I'm assuming that each year, this is probably one of those laws that are under attack year after year. Or is this one of those things that we don't have to worry about as far as going away?
Well, you are correct. It is something that comes up on a regular basis. I don't know if it's annually that it comes up, but when an administration is looking to increase tax revenue, this is one of the first items that they look at to get rid of, if you will, because, you know, it is in one way costing the government a lot of money in tax revenue because of the benefit that the taxpayer is getting from doing an exchange. I mean, you can imagine all of the investment properties that are sold within the 50 states and all of the, in whenever a 1031 exchange is done, the capital gains that would normally be realized by the government with that sale are deferred and not paid by someone doing a 1031 exchange. Yeah, the government's losing out on lots of money. You know, Section 1031 has been around for, I believe, about 35 years. Okay. I could be off on that. I'm not sure the exact year, but it's definitely been a conversation. I don't believe in ever being comfortable that something's never going to be affected. That's just fair, not fair. The reality that we live in nowadays. It's been a discussion to get repealed multiple times, and with the current administration, they have tried. They haven't been successful, fortunately.
Gotcha. All right. Well, then, and that's an important question, just for everybody to really, really understand the historical background on it, the process it goes through administration after administration, but it is something that has lasted throughout the years. So, let's just, obviously you're staying in tune with it, and let's just go ahead and talk about some of the opportunities within it. So when you think about a 1031 exchange, as you're talking, everything has its pros and everything has its cons. Just a simple question here, with the Freedom 1031, does it sit more on the pro side or on the con side? What do you feel?
Yeah, it definitely is heavily favoring the pros side with the 1031 exchange. Obviously the biggest pro is you're deferring any capital gains tax that you would regularly realize with the sale of any real estate property. And the pro is that you get to reinvest all that money into another real estate investment property. Now the cons would be, you don't get to keep any of that money. If you do, you're going to pay capital gains tax on what you keep. And then the other con would be some of the deadlines that are in Section 1031 as part of completing an exchange aren't the easiest to deal with, but they are manageable. If you prepare and you know what you're doing, then you can essentially eliminate that con from an exchange.
Gotcha. All right. And so let's talk about some of the different exchanges that you can get involved with. So a forward exchange, and just off my limited knowledge, this seems like one of the easier, more less complex exchanges within the three that are available. So talk to us a little bit more about the forward exchange and how that, and what circumstances you see yourself utilizing a forward exchange.
Yeah, so a forward 1031 exchange is essentially what we call a standard exchange. So it is when you are going to sell a real estate investment property and you sell that property first. The funds from that property are then used to purchase a new investment property, which we call your replacement property, as part of an exchange. And that's the proper order, right? So when we're talking forward, the order is sell first, buy second. So that's, and predominantly that is most of exchanges. The other two that we'll talk about, we actually structure the others to look to act like a forward 1031 exchange, because that is how Section 1031 is written. So yeah, that's a forward exchange. Sell first, buy second.
Okay. Now, how heavily does it depend on your realtor to be part of this? And this is where, if you're a real estate agent watching this is where you come into play, and you're part of this exchange process, right? On some level.
Yeah, they absolutely are. A good real estate agent, when they're listing the property for their client to sell, one of the questions they should be asking is, they know whether or not this is an investment property for the seller, or if it's a primary residence. Now, just a side note, you don't do a 1031 exchange when it's your primary residence. Exchanges are only for investment property. So when the agent is listing this and they know that it's an investment property, that should be one of their questions as part of their listing strategy is, hey, when you sell this, what are your plans to do with the money? Are you looking to cash out, or are you looking to reinvest into another real estate property? Because if that's the case, are you aware of a 1031 exchange and the benefits with it? The reason why it's so good to do that up front is there are plenty of times that I do a closing. I sit down at the closing table to sign the sale paperwork, and the seller asks me, hey, can I do a 1031 exchange on this sale? You know, being the service provider that I am, the answer is yes. You know, it's not too late. There is such a thing as never or being too late. But in this case, you know, it's the 11th hour. Planning for this, you can eliminate some of the cons again from an exchange if you plan better. So knowing before you get to the closing table that you're doing an exchange is a good idea. So as a realtor, that's a great question to ask them up front. And if that's the case, then you can start to strategize with that exchange, because, and we'll get into it here in a minute with some of the deadline stuff that comes in with an exchange. But that's the biggest thing that a realtor can do, is help educate the client on what an exchange is, because it's likely that client selling doesn't even know about Section 1031.
That's exactly my point, because that conversation sometimes, if I can remember anything, does not come up until maybe even last minute, or until you may bring it up. But that conversation sometimes with a realtor, and truth be told, sometimes you don't want to lose a sale. Let's be very clear, as you're doing business. So you don't want to convolute the sale with any information that may throw anybody off. So you may not say anything, but when it comes at the closing table, there is a time frame when you might be too late.
Yeah, I'm a firm believer that seller is going to appreciate you bringing it up at the listing as opposed to at the closing table.
Got it.
100%.
Okay. Yeah. So let's bring this one in, because this one seems complicated, but it seems simple. I mean, actually, the verbiage seems very simple. It's just reverse, you know, but it seems like there's a lot more movement in this one versus the forward exchange. Would you agree to that?
Yeah, absolutely. There's more going on with a reverse exchange. So, and like you said, it's exactly what it says. It's reversed. It's backwards. So in this circumstance, the property that you would normally, okay, so again, the forward exchange is sell first, buy second. This one, it's a scenario where you've already found the property that you want to purchase as your replacement property as part of a 1031 exchange. But your sale, you haven't even listed it, or you've had your sale on the market and it's not sold yet, but you've come across a replacement property that you really want, that you know is a great investment, and you don't want to lose out on the tax benefits of an exchange. So in this instance, we're going to buy the property that you are going to replace before you sell the property that you're selling. And to do this, there's extra strategies involved. You know, with a 1031 exchange, there's a forward exchange, just to rewind a little bit, there's basically three main parties. There's the title and escrow company, there's the seller, or who we call the exchanger, okay, and then there's the intermediary. So the intermediary is what we are, is a Freedom 1031. When the proceeds from that sale when that sale is fully closed and conducted by the title company, instead of them sending the proceeds to the seller, they send the proceeds from that sale to us as the intermediary, and we hold the funds for their benefit to use on the purchase of the replacement property. With a reverse exchange, you have to bring in a fourth party, which is called an EAT, or an exchange accommodation title holder. So what we do is we purchase the property that is going to be the replacement property on the exchange, and the EAT is the buyer for that transaction. The exchanger provides the funds for the purchase. There are situations where if the seller or exchanger don't have the cash, they don't have the cash available to purchase the replacement property, then they can get a loan. You're usually using some type of private financing on that, hard money loan. Somebody that understands what a reverse exchange is, not all lenders are gonna understand that, because the EAT is going to take title on this purchase, but the exchanger is gonna provide the funds for the purchase. Okay. And then once that is completed, the seller will continue to work on, or maybe in the circumstances, list the property that they're going to sell they'll get that property sold, and we'll do the same thing that you would do on a forward exchange. The title company closes it. They wire the funds from that sale to the intermediary. And then we conduct a sale from the EAT to the exchanger. So they are the buyer, just like they would be on a forward exchange. So again, we structure these all to be a forward exchange in the end, but we've got extra things added on to make that happen. So the EAT will then transfer title and sell the property to the exchanger as their replacement property. That way they're still following the same guidelines in Section 1031 to sell a relinquished property and buy a replacement property. So the EAT is just there to hold title temporarily and to accomplish in that and keep the exchanger's interest in the property secure. There's a note that's signed between the EAT and the exchanger, and that's recorded on the property, the replacement property, so that the buyer doesn't, you know, the EAT is not just going to go out and sell this property without them. They've got their interest in the property. It's just the means of holding it to complete the exchange.
Trent, out of first sight, if I was in the industry and I knew about this, doesn't sound like a fearful transaction.
No, not at all. Right? I mean, you know, sometimes because it's complicated, it can scare people. And right. They think, oh, wait, I'm not even taking title to this property. There are documents that are signed that fully explain what is going on in the agreement between the EAT and the exchanger. You know, if the exchange doesn't happen and it gets canceled for some reason, the EAT is bound by that agreement just to convey title to the exchanger. So the EAT can in no way just steal that property. It just doesn't work that way. So, and we work with EATs that are ethical, reputable people so that they would never have to deal with that either.
That's fair. And you can appreciate, Trent, if I heard about this before, that wouldn't send fear, you know, through my bones, if you will. But if I had never heard of a reverse, and then I heard all these extra steps within it, I'm petrified. I'm like, no, forget about that. Right.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of extra steps, but
yeah, new stuff is, you know, can be a little bit scary, but it's completely legitimate.
That's fair. All right. So then I have to ask this because I wouldn't be doing my job. How does time, if you're doing, because a forward seems like you will hit time maybe just right, or maybe sooner within that window, but it seems like this reverse has a lot of implications when it comes to time, where you may not meet deadlines if you're not doing this. If anything goes awry, you know, in real estate, 20,000 things can happen.
Yeah, this is a great time to talk about the deadlines for an exchange. So with any exchange, you have 180 days to complete the exchange.
Okay.
Not 6 months, it's 180 days. Because 180 days doesn't equivalent to 6 months exactly. It's roughly the same, but it's different. So on a forward exchange, from when the sale is recorded, you have 180 days to use the money from that sale to purchase your replacement property. Okay? The first 45 days of that 180 days is what we call your identification period. So that's the time in which you as the exchanger would identify or notify the intermediary of what property or properties you plan to purchase with the exchange proceeds from your sale. Okay.
Okay.
Now with a reverse exchange, the deadlines are the same. So it's still 180 days. So from the day that the EAT takes title on the replacement property, the clock starts on the exchange. So you still have 180 days to complete the exchange, meaning you have 180 days to sell the property that you're looking to sell, or your relinquished property. And then we close on that purchase transaction from the EAT to the exchanger. Now, the sale of your relinquished property and the closing between the EAT and the exchanger can be done very close to each other. So, you know, we usually say give it at least 2 days just to be safe, because all states work different on recording procedures and time frames and whatnot. So we like to give it a, you know, a couple days at least just to be safe, but you're still subject to the 180 days on the time frame to complete the exchange.
Okay, that's fair. I'm gonna come back to this note, but I'm gonna bring up this next exchange opportunity. It's called an improvement 1031 for those that are listening to this and not have an opportunity to watch it. So this one, out of all of them, just like Forward, improvement seems like it's a very straightforward, because you're improving upon the investment estate, right?
Yeah. So what an improvement exchange is, the best scenario that I can give you for that is, okay, so same situation, the exchanger is looking to sell a property and they want to purchase another investment property, but that replacement property needs some work. Okay, so they're going to take, let's say the sales price on the relinquished sale is $500,000, and they didn't have a mortgage on it or anything. So their net gain from that sale is roughly $450,000 after paying closing costs, commissions, and whatnot. So they've got $450,000 that they're going to use to, number one, acquire the replacement property. Let's say that replacement property to acquire is $250,000. So they buy it, and we use the exchange funds from that sale to purchase the replacement property, but they still have $200,000 left in the exchange, and they can use that money to improve that property that they just purchased. Okay. So if it's refurbishing a house or a duplex or an apartment complex or a commercial building, whatever it is, they can use that money to improve that replacement property. So again, you're still subject to the 180 days for the time frame to complete the exchange. And on an improvement exchange, it's kind of a mix between a forward and a reverse exchange. So when we do these, we will sell the relinquished property, take those proceeds, and buy the replacement property. But we, in this instance, we typically will put title into the name of the EAT again until the improvements are completed. Okay. So they're going to be a temporary title holder again on title. And then once that, you know, $200,000 in this scenario is spent on the improvements being made to the replacement property, we would do a closing from the EAT to the exchanger to conduct that replacement property closing as part of Section 1031. Now, the kicker on that is the improvements have to be done to the property. Yes. You can't prepay for things. I mean, you could theoretically, but you run the risk of, when you get audited, of the IRS invalidating the exchange, because the property has to be improved in order to justify the expense. So that's probably the hardest part about an improvement exchange, is you've got 180 days to do these improvements. Now, if they're not huge improvements, then no big deal, right? But if there's a lot of improvements, you've got a game plan so that you're, when your sale on the relinquished property closes, we want to be acquiring that replacement property fairly quickly. I'd say within a week, 2 weeks, ideally, so that you have pretty much the entire 180 days to use towards improving the replacement property. Because you've got to, if there's any money left in the exchange that's not used for the improvement, that is going to get refunded to the exchanger, and they will pay capital gains on whatever they keep.
Gotcha. Okay, so let me go ahead and throw out the scenario, because it absolutely applies, because it has a lot to do with the realtor knowing what their buyer is going to do. Because yeah, it sounds like if you're in this situation, you're not going to close on the house overnight. It doesn't happen right. that quick, right? So when is that time frame in which the realtor and the buyer need to have that discussion to say, hey, I'm about to do this, but I need to go ahead and find this house first so these moves can be made here at the, during this time frame? Because it seems like, I feel like there's a lot of collision courses where some people don't make it in time because that conversation happens after the sale. Then now they're looking for a property, and then
yes.
by the time they're closed, it's too late. I mean, is that what you see in a lot of scenarios?
Such a good point, and the key thing. So the reason most, in, at least in my experience, the reason most exchanges fail is because there's no planning ahead on what they want to purchase. So that 45-day identification period is so short. It is hard to close on the sale of a property and then start looking for your replacement property and find something that you're happy with and that you know will work for you within a 45-day window. And be confident about it, right? So you can identify, you know, depending on your scenario, we usually roughly say you can identify three properties because you can buy more than one property on an exchange. You can buy
okay.
up to three without any complications. If you buy more than three on an exchange, then there's some ratios that come into play with appraisal values and whatnot. So just simply stated, you can identify three properties saying, this is what I'm looking to purchase. You don't have to be under contract, but you just have to identify it. But if none of those three go under contract, or they either go under contract and fall out of contract, and you don't purchase any of those, then you have to cancel the exchange. You cannot identify additional properties after the first 45 days. So to answer your question, this is why it's important for the agent to ask these questions to their client when they're listing the property or when they're just even talking about possibly listing the property. So, you right. know, what's your plan? If you're starting to list the property, let's start looking for a replacement property now. Don't wait until the sale is under contract. Start looking now, because if you come across one that you just love to death and you know it's going to be the best one for you, the reverse exchange is there for you. Now, it's a little bit more costly to do a reverse exchange, but if you find the right investment property, sometimes it's worth paying just a few more fees to get exactly what you want. So don't wait to start looking for a replacement property. Start early, even before you've listed your property in some circumstances, because again, if you find a property that's a vacant ground, a lot, and you're like, okay, well, we love this lot, let's build an investment property on it, you would maybe want to do an improvement exchange, and you want to be able to close on that purchase right after you close on the sale, so that you have that full 180-day window to make your improvements. If you close on that improvement, that replacement property, you know, 60, 90 days into your exchange, you now have half of the time available to make the improvements. So it all depends on what that replacement property ends up being that kind of determines what type of exchange you end up wanting to do. So I think looking for the replacement property either before you sell your property or at the same time you're looking to sell is an excellent idea, because you just don't know when you're going to come across something that you love.
Yeah, that's fair. Question here, and this came to me as you're talking. We're right now in the marketplace where a lot of real estate is moving. Do you notice a lot of people making a lot more exchanges now when the interest rates are high, or when there's what kind of variables do you notice when people make a lot of decisions when it comes to exchanges? Is it when the market's bear, or what do you see?
Most of my exchanges, I'm dealing with cash, with people that are paying cash for their properties.
Okay.
They're not taking into account the current interest rates.
Okay.
It certainly can happen, but for some reason or another, most of my clients end up paying cash. So meaning on the property that they're selling, they don't have a mortgage on it. So they're keeping pretty much all of the money from that sale and putting it into the replacement property. And every once in a while they have to take out a loan, but I don't think that's the main driver of them doing an exchange, right? Knowledgeable real estate investors realize that these interest rates are most likely temporary. We don't expect to see these for forever. You know, a lot of people would say, hopefully they're going to come down sometime this year. I'm doubtful of that. I think it's probably going to be more like next year when we get into the election year that something's probably going to change. That's usually a political strategy for the administration that's in the White House. So I wouldn't be surprised if we saw it. I certainly wouldn't bank on it because you just never know with the inflation that we've got too. So, but avid real estate investors aren't going to worry so much about those interest rates as they are values. And we do see values coming down right now. Okay. Where I'm at, Utah is a super strong market, has been through most of the ups and downs. It's been super consistent, but we're even seeing drops in values now. So this is a good time to get out there looking because something might come available. It might be a distressed property. Some would say we're in a recession. We're not in a recession. I tend to say that we're in a recession because of the drop in values and people are having to unload properties that they may have acquired that they can't keep up with or that was unaffordable for them. Maybe they purchased it during this recent boom that we had. So a good real estate investor is just going to pick up property when they can. That's a good deal for them.
Makes sense. All right. And let's, so since we're talking about property, let's talk about three different types of property in which people can facilitate a 1031 exchange. So when it comes to land, Trent, do you see a lot more people doing, of course, I'm certain that you've seen all three, but which one is more popular when it comes to land? Do you see it as more of an investment or improvement exchange?
You know, when it comes to the land, so just one thing to touch on this, let's clarify like kind exchange now that we're talking about the property itself. Some people get a little bit wrapped up in specifics of like kind. When section 1031 is talking about like kind, it's literally real estate for real estate. So you can sell any type of real estate and purchase another type of real estate. It's all real estate. As long as it's a deeded title to the property, then it's all labeled under like kind as real estate. So you can sell a commercial property and buy a residential property. You can sell a residential property and buy vacant ground. You can sell residential and buy storage units. As long as it's a deeded property, that's like kind. So I don't see more of anything. It just depends. It just depends on the transaction. So land is what you're going to see a lot of. I'll see more improvement exchanges with vacant ground involved,
right?
Because people want to maximize their tax benefit and use that money to both buy that ground and improve it than anything else. So commercial is always hot, but so is real estate residential. It just depends, but commercial is probably one of the more common because that is a true investment property, right? Residential sometimes is our personal residence. So, but commercial property is basically always an investment property. So it tends to be, have exchanges done more with commercial than anything else.
Gotcha. And so this is where you have your commercial realtors that are heavily involved in some of these type of transactions, right?
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, commercial realtors, they should all know about 1031 exchanges and kind of the basics of them in order to help facilitate those with their clients.
For sure. Okay. Well, talk to me, Trent. What, obviously, first of all, thank you for expressing it and really educating us on all these opportunities within the 1031 exchange. What final thoughts would you give our viewing audience today?
You know, the final thoughts would be don't try and answer these questions on your own. Bring in somebody that knows what they're talking about when it comes to doing a 1031 exchange. So as the realtor or financial planner, you know, CPA, even a CPA, some don't really have the expertise in what an exchange is or how to account for them. So if you have a client that's participating in a transaction that a 1031 might benefit them, educate them with what you've got and say, hey, let's talk to somebody else and get their opinion on it and see if this is the right thing to do. Even with the experience that we have, I always recommend getting advice from your CPA or your tax attorney if they have the education on whether or not doing an exchange is right for you. Most of the time, it's going to be the right move, just mainly because we've seen so much appreciation and value with properties over the last 3 to 4 years. It's unlikely that an exchange is not going to benefit you if you do actually plan to sell and purchase another real estate investment property. But there certainly could be a circumstance where it doesn't benefit you. And we certainly don't want to go through the work in charging you the fees and whatnot of doing an exchange if it's not going to benefit you. So we always recommend getting advice from your CPA or tax attorney on whether an exchange is right for you. If you don't have someone that's educated enough to be able to give you that opinion, we can put you in contact with the people that we work with, CPAs and tax attorneys. They can help give you a recommendation or some advice on whether an exchange would be right for you. And then, you know, we do free consultations. If you are thinking a 1031 might be right for you, we're happy to talk through that with you and see if it's, if it can be done.
Thank you so much, Trent. And, you know, on behalf of Executive Talk, thank you for being a great example as to what service looks like and providing the service that you do and taking care of folks. Because again, this is one of those, seems like a very, because of the time limit, because of the complexity of this exchange, you can get in, you can really, you know, mess up a couple of things. So, you know, taking care of folks on their real estate transaction and making sure that their money is taken care of and don't have any, you know, financial implications with the IRS is huge. So again, thank you for your service and everything that you do.
Yeah, thanks for having me. This has been great.
You're welcome. You're welcome. And to close today's show, I want to thank all the viewers that were here and that were listening today to learn more about the 1031 exchange. Again, as I mentioned before, there's a couple of people that already know about a 1031 exchange, and there's a couple of people that are knowledgeable about a 1031 exchange. The key to today's conversation is now you know. And most importantly, now you know who to go to whenever you need to utilize a 1031 exchange or start asking some questions, because as Trent explained to us, the time is now to ask before you get into a future sale. There's a window here. And there's a window opportunity. And most importantly, you want to make sure that you're working with somebody that has high integrity and knows what they're doing and can get you down the pathway ethically and, you know, financially sound. For everybody here, I want to thank everybody for watching us today. But in the meantime, Trent and I, we actually have to get back to work. So you guys have a wonderful day. We'll see you next time.